On this week's episode, I sit down with Nicolo Porcella, big wave surfer, base jumper and windsuit pilot. We discuss what it takes to compete in the world's most extreme sports, how to face your fears and embrace the uncertainty of Mother Nature, and how to design your ideal lifestyle and turn your passion into profit. Welcome to the Male Mastery Podcast. Brother, welcome to the podcast.
All right, Jamie, stoked to be here, buddy.
Hey, it took us a while to get there, what with a few technical glitches, but I think bearing in mind we're talking from opposite ends of the globe, modern technology, it's a great thing after all, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not complaining, let's put it that way.
Well, look, first and foremost, appreciate you taking the time out to come on to the podcast. I know it's been a while in the making, but very excited to have you on. So, look, I'm going to jump straight in. Big wave surfer, kite surfer, freebaser, and wingsuit. What would you call it? Wingsuit flyer, jumper?
Yeah, wingsuit pilot. We call ourselves pilots, but we're flyers, you know. Explorers, adventurers.
Extreme adventurers, I would say. Extreme sports. So my question to you is, why not golf or fishing?
You know what? I mean, hey, I have a bunch of good friends that love fishing, and I think at some point I might get into it, but right now this is what I love. This is what captured my attention, and I'm just pursuing my passion, you know? I'm pursuing what I love. But man, nothing wrong with fishing. It's just, I don't know, I enjoy a little bit more flying. Let's put it this way.
Man, I was going to say, just looking at your videos is absolutely insane. Look, for all of the listeners out there, just take us back more to your childhood, because what you do and the life that you enjoy is very different to, I would say, 99% of people out there. And the thing that I really want to kind of nail down on is your mindset. Take me back to your childhood. How did it kind of all happen to get you to your current position?
So I grew up, I was born in Maui, but raised in Italy. So 2 weeks after I was born here in Maui, my parents moved back to Italy, where my dad is from. My mom is from New York. And I grew up pretty much skateboarding and doing gymnastics. And then my dad was very into windsurfing. He was a journalist for the PWA, the main world tour for windsurfing. And so he got my brother and I into windsurfing. And then it basically, we moved to Hawaii in 2000. I was 12 and a half years old. And I grew up, I started kite surfing, and that became my passion and kind of took off from there. And right as I was about 13 years old is when my career in kitesurfing really took off. And so basically I didn't go to school much, because when I went to the public school, I ended up skipping 6 months out of the school year because of traveling for kitesurfing, for doing all the competitions and the travel stories. And so I basically grew up doing kitesurfing, gymnastics, and skateboarding. And then I got into cliff diving and acrobatics when I was 15 years old. Simultaneously, I was kitesurfing. But on the side from kitesurfing, I was also doing some acrobatics and cliff diving. And I guess that's when I started to really, you know, jumping off some high cliffs is when I started to get that, you know, feeling of like, frick, I want to leap off and kind of fly. And then what? I mean, it basically, big wave surfing came in my life right about at the same time when I was 17 years old in about 2006. And I was kind of practicing kite surfing, big wave surfing, and cliff diving at the same time. And then skydiving came in my life right as I was turning 23 years old. And then from there, it went skydiving to then base jumping, and then to wingsuit flying. And that was kind of the progression, let's put it that way.
So have you actually ever had what I would call a normal job or a 9 to 5?
I would say I never had that. I have done, you know, a couple years of landscaping and doing a bit of construction work, which was kind of a 9-to-5, but not really. That was between 16 and 18 years old when I had a couple bad injuries that, you know, I got set back and I lost sponsorships and had to get kind of a more normal job. And then I became a kite instructor and that was, you know, 9:30 to 2:30. So never to 5. So I would say I never truly had a normal 9-to-5 job aside from some years where I did landscape and construction that was like a full day, but that was sometimes 7 to 3, you know, so it kind of depended. It wasn't like never had an office job 9-to-5. That's for sure.
Okay. So I'm assuming from what you've said is that you, from a young age, you started to compete, you started to take on sponsors, and this was becoming more of something you could build a career out of.
I kind of lost you there.
Just to go back from what I gather from speaking to you and the research that I've done, you started to get into competitions and you started to get sponsorship from an early age. So it potentially had the opportunity to make your passion into a full-time career.
100%. Yes.
How did that affect you from a young age? Did you automatically just, because obviously you've got, I mean, I'm thinking going back to kind of skateboarding and things like that, you hear of people that have gone out into the sponsorship, haven't necessarily gone to school as much as what they could have because they're pursuing a passion. What did it feel like to be kind of put in the spotlight at an early age?
I'll be honest, I definitely had my ups and downs. You know, there was a feeling, you know, a lot of pressure to perform and always be at the top. And then there was, you know, a bit of the reality of, you know, the sport that I was doing was, you know, very risky and injury prone. And so, you know, there was a bit of that competition side of it that I didn't like so much, because a lot of times you had to compete in conditions that were not ideal for what we were doing. And it was hard at the time because it was more like to express the art of the moves that I wanted to do. So I wanted to at some point be more focused on making movies and inventing new movies and doing travel stories and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the attention was on competition. But I was right in the transition where I was able to make a name for myself for inventing new moves, for doing travel stories and putting a lot of, you know, style and art into the sport. So I was able to not compete as much, but deliver more by doing the travel stories, by doing the movies and the documentaries that ultimately actually progress the sport more.
And was that a conscious decision? Did you enjoy making the movies more than what you did actually compete in?
I 100%. Yes, it was a conscious decision. Simply just following my heart, you know, following my passion. I'm like, you know, it's like I'm not really enjoying myself every time I went to these competitions. There was some times that I was when conditions were good and, you know, that day you're feeling really awesome. I was enjoying it, but there was many times that I wasn't. And so I started to see in snowboarding, in skateboarding, in skiing, in other sports, where it's like, hey, there's a bunch of these athletes in these sports that are not necessarily competing, but they're making this video that I'm watching that I'm enjoying more than watching a competition. And the guy is doing something that even in some of the competitions are not doing, but then they're doing later. I'm like, why can't I bring this to this sport? Why can't we do it? And at the same time that I was seeing this and kind of, you know, realizing that this is possible, there were also good mentors and friends of mine that were doing the same, where they weren't necessarily competing, but they were delivering by creating beautiful movies and images for the magazines, for the movies, that were able to bring in, you know, the finances to support, you know, doing that. So I consciously said, hey, you know what? I'm going to pursue this more rather than, you know, if I'm getting number one, number two, number three, whatever the ranking is, let me be recognized for actually doing something that's beautiful, that the people in the competitions are actually looking at you saying, dude, that was rad. I'm going to implement this move in the competition. So that's kind of where, for me, it came into like, you know what? Why am I putting myself in this where I might not enjoy myself really that much and not get so much out of it? Or I could be, you know, focusing on actually doing what I love. And that's when, you know, I started to really be recognized for doing the travel stories, for making the movies, and kind of creating something new. And that was a realization. And that's what I kept pursuing at that point. And it paid off.
Well, I think you've touched upon a couple of really relative points there. And first and foremost, it sounds to me as if you kind of really wanted to hone your craft and your passion rather than strive for the adulation and the glory of competing. And did you know, like you say, that was a conscious decision from yourself. And I'm assuming it was a gut decision, something that instinctively felt right.
That 100%. It was also, let's say, you know, I was kind of competing in the beginning in the year 2000 and 2001. I did the world tour. And then in 2002 is when I really started to realize like, hey, you know, I want to be doing this. It was kind of a gut for sure, gut feeling. And also, you know, you always hear the saying, you know, follow your heart, follow your passion. And although I was young, that stuck with me. And I was like, well, this is more of my passion. And then, you know, when I was 15, that I had, you know, a really strong injury to my wrist and then my back, which was when I lost some of my sponsors because I had to take so much time off and started working again. That's when I, you know, read the book, The Four Agreements from Don Miguel Ruiz. And that to me made me think even more so like, hey, you know, let me not make assumptions here. Let me like really focus on what I really love and what I think I can excel in. And I basically started being more conscious of that and started pursuing that more and working with the videographers and working with the photographers and working with the magazines and with the content, you know, with the people that were creating the documentaries and ended up being the best thing ever because I got to, you know, practice what I loved, which was going out kiting every day. But having kind of more of the free spirit of expressing myself rather than focusing what the judges really wanted, you know, and a lot of times when you're competing, traveling from one place to another, not in the right conditions, but more so in the place where the crowd is there and where the, you know, the finances, the supporting of that, you know, specific event is for, we were actually traveling to do all these beautiful destinations and exploring new spots and new places. It was just way better. And we were creating the movies and the documentary that everybody in the sport ended up getting inspired to practice the sport. So it ended up being, you know, following what I loved ended up being the best thing 100%.
I want to touch upon something before we move on to a few questions that I've got. When you went through, it sounded as if you were, what, a teenager when you experienced some injuries, you lost sponsorship and things like that. How did that affect you mentally?
I mean, now it's always fun. It's always looking back that you realize that was one of the best things that could have ever happened. It gave me, first of all, it made me look into like, training and staying fit because at that age, you don't think about it so much. You know what I mean? You're more just, you're full of energy. Go, 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 do this, do that. And I didn't have, like, I wasn't really honing, you know, eating healthy and exercising correctly aside from the sport that I was doing and strengthening certain things and having a strong core and having strong joints and tendons and ligaments. And then having the mindset of being grateful for what you have, you know, all, you know, I was in an age where I was growing up and didn't really understand certain things. And so having that setback, having that injury made me read a book, which I never read in my life. You know what I mean? It made me talk to some friends about life and all the personal stuff that I had. And, you know, at the time I had a, you know, hard relationship with my dad and felt a lot of pressure and wasn't feeling good in my own home. You know, I wanted to kind of be in my, on my own. And so also creating, you know, being surrounded by a good group of mentors and friends, it made me grow up and made me understand more the bigger picture about life. So having those injuries and that setback actually strengthened my mindset and my, you know, my vision, my goal, my purpose of what I wanted to continue to pursue in my life. And now looking back, it was some of the best times in my life is when I got set back. And then, you know, a setback is a great setup for a great comeback. And that's what happened in my life. I got set back for a couple of years and then I came back stronger and had new ideas of new moves I wanted to do and new travel stories and evolved on progressing the sport from wakeboard style to also strapless and implementing more of the surf style into the sport of kite surfing. And it brought me to travel to all these beautiful places around the world. So honestly, it was, and it made me more independent, made me appreciate more all the little details of life. So it was really a great thing to have those injuries at a young age, to have that setback, in order for me to grow, you know, long story short, in order for me to grow.
So a typical scenario of growth through adversity.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Exactly.
What does it feel like when you are on a surfboard faced with what you know to be a huge fucking wave or standing on top of a mountain just about to jump off with a parachute? What goes through your mind? And is it more mentally or physically?
Well, I think we're pretty aware that our mental is connected with our physical body. So obviously, a lot of the, it's funny, people think, are you afraid in the moment? And it's like, you know, for a big wave day or a day that I'm going to go hike a big mountain and have to hike for hours and then have a technical flight. Honestly, a lot of the, let's say the fear and the tension and the anxiety is like the days before the mission, you know, or the day that you're going to front. And then, you know, maybe sometimes in the morning a little bit for the big waves and stuff like that, or for the big hike. But then once I'm hiking or once I'm in the water, there's this sense of peace. I mean, I at some point I'm committed. I've released. I've already done my breath work. I've already done my prayer. I've already done my intention. So at some point I just release everything and I'm in what I call flow. I'm just in the moment and there's not much else that I'm thinking about, but just what I'm doing right there and then. And that obviously, you know, same thing with a climb, you know, when you're getting to do a technical climb, there is that initial fear at the beginning, but then once you're in the rock and you are climbing, same thing when you're about to jump from the cliff, there's a little bit of that initial, whew, am I really about to do this? You get in your preparation, you get in your breathing, you visualize what you're about to do. And then when it's like time to do it and you're committed to doing it, you don't think anymore. You just, you know, you just react and have your muscle memory take over and yeah, you're in flow.
So it sounds to me as if there's a connection, something similar that I hear a lot of combat sports athletes talk about, boxers, MMA fighters, is that they're asked the question a lot of the time, are you scared when you walk into the ring? And quite often or not, they will say that the hard work has actually already been done. The hard work is the 12-week fight camp before they actually get into the octagon or they actually get into the ring, and they would only be scared if they didn't put the work in beforehand. So I suppose really there's a similarity in so much as it's not as if you've just been working as an accountant for the last year and somebody's just like, okay, jump in a helicopter. We're going to drop you off at the top of a mountain. Now you've got to jump. you've actually been working for this. You've been visualizing, you've been doing meditation, the breath work, and you've also had that climb all the way to the top of the mountain. So would you say that there's almost that, not relief, but satisfaction of, thank God, I've actually got here. Now let's enjoy ourselves.
It's you just said it so good. It's exactly that. It's you have so much preparation that comes beforehand, and you still, as I said, the day before or the morning of, there's a little bit of like that little bit of nerves, a little bit, you know, like what I'm about to do is pretty, you know, full on. But then there's actually, as I said, once you get into that release of like, dude, I've put in all the work. I know exactly what I'm about to do. I'm going to enjoy myself and I'm ready for whatever comes. So, and you're obviously, you have in mind the best outcome of what you're about to do. And you're not, you know, worried about, you know, what's going to go wrong. You just know that you're going to execute what you know you do best. So it's like what you just said. And what I say with everybody is like, it's not about sending it, you know what I mean? Or like, I'm just going to go for it. You know, it's not like that. It's like, you've put in so much work. The going for it started 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 6 years ago to build me up to doing this specific line and that specific line that I've been working for, putting in my life's intention to making what I'm going to about to do in a controlled way. I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to freak or scare myself. I want to do what I love. I want to enjoy what I do. But what we do is dangerous. Stepping into a cage is like, you're going for it. You're stepping off a mountain. You're going for it. You're riding a big wave. You're going for it. But there's so much awareness and understanding that comes beforehand, so that when you go do it, you're enjoying it. You're doing actually something that you're so looking forward to.
Yeah, we've got a saying in the UK, enjoying the fruits of your labor.
Yeah, exactly.
And I suppose really it's the same as most things. If you do the preparation, yes, it is worrying, but if you're doing the work, you know when you're slacking, you know when you have to do certain things. That builds up over time and through experience. So one thing that I want to touch upon, now you do some extreme and very insane sports and feats. What would you say is the most, I don't think I'd use the word scary, but what is, where do you get the most adrenaline from? And is it the big wave surfing? Is it the wingsuit flying? What one makes you sit there and think to yourself, or what one makes you take that second breath and think, okay, here we go?
That's a great question. Everybody, a lot of people ask me that, and you know, it's one of those things where to respect everybody in each sport, because some people are doing one sport and not doing the other, and I've done simultaneously all three for many years. But for example, Jaws was going off the last 2 days and today, right? Jaws here in Maui, the biggest wave. Mm-hmm. I haven't gone the last 3 days, and I'm probably not going to be going for another month or two to Jaws because I'm not prepared for it. And I've been so focused on wingsuit flying for these last, you know, 5 years, and really, really deeply in it for the last 3 years, where I've put big wave surfing and kite surfing aside to really hone in and achieve some stuff that I wanted to in wingsuit flying, where I had to cut these two out because I couldn't stay current on one or the other. And so that would put me in a state where I had too much fear, too much anxiety. I would get to a point where it's like, dude, I think about my wife, I think about my friends, and what am I doing here? You know what I mean? And this is where I started to, you know, you start to understand, well, like your ego wants to do all these things, but then you start to look and be like, hey, wait a second here. You know what I mean? Like, are you, you know, you're taking a big risk. Are you really ready for it? You know, inside of you, if you're ready for something or if you're not.
Yeah.
And so right now, my passion that took over about 7 years ago was wingsuit flying. in 2014, 15, 16, I was practicing kite surfing, big wave surfing, and wingsuit flying all at the same time, actually from 2012 to 2016. And in 2016, I had a kind of like a realization of like, Niccolo, this is when you start to realize you got to start making some critical decisions for your future. I was out at Jaws, or I was kite surfing doing a photo shoot, and I'm thinking about wingsuit flying. I'm out at Jaws and I'm thinking about wingsuit flying. And so, and I start getting a little bit like, you know, why am I don't want to be doing this as much right now. I love this so much. And I started to put my attention into wingsuit flying. So now on a big critical day, I don't feel the confidence to go out paddling or towing at Jaws. I don't feel like the confidence to go out kite surfing and do the most technical move, or go out in the most critical conditions at Jaws or some big wave, because my attention, my mindset hasn't been thinking about that. I've been thinking about flying, and flying is what gives me that, yeah, like this is freaking exactly what I want to do. So let's be honest, the last 7 years, wingsuit flying kind of took over as far as having that enjoyment of climbing with a mountain with my friends or with my partner, and then flying a technical, beautiful, insane line, and then landing and, you know, just having this insane euphoria and rush that you get that, you know, big wave surfing and kite surfing just, you know, it gave it to me in the past. And I guess we call it evolution. You know, I reached a high level, and I've done a lot of things that I wanted to do in kite surfing. Same thing in big wave surfing. Wingsuit flying is just what has been, you know, getting my attention and getting me the most, you know, stoked and joyful and, you know, euphoric feelings. So I've been pursuing that more and staying current in that, really mainly the last 5 years.
Okay, so let me try to put it another way, because it sounds to me as if you've got basically a huge amount of respect for each individual sport, which, you know, I can totally see that evolution from being the big wave surfing through to kind of wingsuit flying. Let me rephrase that. Which one has given you the most adrenaline buzz? If you had to pick one, or is it wingsuit flying?
Yeah.
Can you put your finger on why?
It's hard to pin it on one thing. I mean, let's put it this way. When you're kiting, you're saying, dude, I was flying. Like, I was flying so fast. When you're surfing down a wave, dude, I was flying down the wave. And now I get to say, I'm literally flying down the mountain. It's like, it's hard to put it in words, but I think everybody can kind of say, gosh, I've dreamt of flying. It's the sickest thing. Can you imagine being a bird and flying like a bird? I basically get that superhuman, like, no way. The speed, the sensation, the energy is just like, it's unbelievable. So for sure you get that surfing, for sure you get that kiting, but the way I personally have felt it, wingsuit flying down the mountain after you climb for 2 days to reach the top, and then you're just flying down the mountain, literally passing falcons, passing eagles, having birds get out of your way. For you to, I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know what I mean? It's an incredible, incredible feeling that it's, and the fact that you're able to share it very intimately with a friend in a way even more so than you can surfing or kite surfing. Meaning surfing at some point, it's you and the wave. It's you. Yeah. It's a solo thing. Kite surfing, same thing. Wingsuit flying, you're able to do a line and literally together with your friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're connecting in a different way, and you're helping each other to make that. You can't even reach the top of that mountain unless your buddy is there. So there's more of that personal connection. You have that toe surfing as well when you're towing each other in and you're putting your buddy in a sick wave, and it's actually you that you towed your buddy in a sick wave. But what I get flying, it's the ultimate rush, the ultimate feeling of like, wow, buddy, that was insane. Did you see that? Did you get, and it's like, yes, buddy, I was right there next to you. That was insane, you know? So yeah, you get to connect in a way that it's pretty unique.
Yeah, I can understand that because, you know, I've listened to interviews with the kind of big wave surfers and normal surfers alike, and they do turn around and say that when they're on that wave, it's almost quite an insular kind of solo feeling because they just feel as if they kind of almost think inwards and a lot of things come naturally. But you've also got that, I suppose, slightly grounded because you're standing on a board that's got some kind of traction on the wave, if that makes sense. And you're kind of almost dictating through kind of certain movements. Yet and I understand there's that element to it with wingsuit flying as well, but it's just the fact that you're actually almost floating or being gliding through the air that must be a completely unreal experience. What sort of speeds do you get up to?
So out of the plane where you have, you know, a long, long amount of altitude, we're hitting 417 kilometers per hour. From a mountain, it all comes down, and that's also with the help of some wind. From the mountain, I'm between 180 to 250 kilometers per hour. That's usually what you're hitting when you're, you know, when you have, like, let's say if I'm jumping from 400 meters, I'm probably going to hit 160, 180. If I'm jumping from, you know, 1500 meters that I have plenty of altitude to dive down, you can hit 250, you can hit 300. If you have 5000 meters, you can build more energy, and you're also working with wind pushing you, you can just work with more energy. And so you have more speed, you have more time to build the speed.
Can you describe the feeling of wingsuit flying in a sentence, if you had to, and I'm putting you on the spot? Describe it in one sentence.
It's exactly what you're thinking. You're flying like a bird. When you think about, are you really, the only thing you're not doing is you're not flapping your arms to go straight up. But everything else, you're really, you know, your head, your shoulders, your hip, your everything is dictating your glide, and it's an unreal feeling. It's hard to really describe it. It feels unbelievable. It feels like exactly what you dream of flying. It's speed and energy, the feeling of flaring back up and diving down and banking a turn. It's an unbelievable feeling.
I bet it is. So there are certain sports that the smallest fraction of movement dictates to the trajectory of where something is going to go. Like, argument's sake, golf. You've only got to be a millimeter off, and it's the difference between going in a straight line or going and veering off quite significantly. How does that relate with wingsuit flying? Because I'm assuming that you don't have to make big adjustments, it's small adjustments to actually really change the trajectory of where you're heading.
Yeah, there's a wide range. So there's very minute movements that you're doing that 100%. I mean, if you can see me right now from this to that, that's already changing. You know what I mean? So they're very minute movements. Now we also do some strong movements. You know, we're also doing barrel rolls. We're flaring and doing front flips or doing back flips. So there's more, you know, aggressive movements, but in the actual, you know, flying really fast and then doing the faster you go, the smaller one little movement dictates.
Yeah.
So when you're going really slow, you can do stronger movements. When you're going really fast, just a minute little hand signal, it's already changing where you're going. A very minute little turn of the head is changing where you're going. So a very small movement can dictate a lot, especially the faster you go. Well, it becomes like very sensitive.
Like the sports science of cycling is that with them, it's all about the aerodynamicity and things like that. When was the first time? Because you obviously, I'm assuming that you built up to wingsuit flying, starting off with, was it skydiving, free base, base jumping or something like that. How do you practice for wingsuit flying? Because for me, base jumping is you start with skydiving and you go tandem with somebody. Then you go from skydiving and then all of a sudden you can do it on your own. Then you're like, right, okay, I'll do base jumping. Is there that natural progression? So can you just take me through in a relatively kind of short version of how you built up to actually start doing the wingsuit flying?
Yeah, so basically, there's two ways of approaching it. You can either start by going on a tunnel. Nowadays, there's, you know, wind tunnels everywhere throughout the world. And so you start, obviously, without a wingsuit. First, you got to think about, you have to learn how to fly your body without any suit. We call it slick, meaning it's just your body with a very thin, tight suit. And you start with that, whether you start in the tunnel or if you start skydiving, you first do a tandem jump, maybe two, maybe three, depending on the place, depending on your, you know, your comfort level. But then you have two people jumping with you from the plane and getting you to be stable and learn how to fly your body. You need to get 200 jumps. That's like kind of a minimum. It's 200 to 300 jump, depending where you are. And then you start with a small suit, which is not even a wingsuit. It's called a tracking suit. And it's basically you still can move all your extremities, but it has a little bit more surface area. So it gives you a little bit more forward movement, a little bit more traction. And then the progression goes from there. Some people don't even go to base jumping. They just stick with skydiving. Base jumping is kind of like saying you're going to the extreme level right away. So I don't know. It's kind of like saying that you're riding your bicycle, your tricycle, and then you're going straight to a 1000 cc horsepower. Is like, you know, a lot of people just stick with riding their bikes, but not going to the most powerful big bike. Or in surfing is like, there's a bunch of beautiful waves that you can surf. It's not like you're going to go to Jaws or to Nazar or to Mavericks to the biggest gigantic wave. Some people just like to surf. They don't like to surf big waves. Base jumping and skydiving is kind of the same thing. Skydiving, you fly a long time. You fly your body. You have a blast. It's way safer. You have a reserve. You have time and space to make mistakes and do things. Base jumping, you're kind of going straight to doing something where you have a little bit more time. So in order to base jump, you already want to be somebody that's comfortable skydiving and knows how to fly their body correctly, especially if you're planning to doing any tracking or wingsuit flying. If you're strictly base jumping, you don't need to be as technical, but still you need to, you know, be comfortable flying your canopy. And going to the argument of before about being current, having your muscle memory react and not have to like think. You basically don't have to think. You have to just react and everything is there. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, your camera just went out. Yeah, so it's basically that you want to start by the wind tunnel or skydiving, get 200, 300 jumps, and then you start with a small suit, and then you gradually build to a bigger suit. And then if you want to take the step of going base jumping, then you take a few step backs and you start again just strictly base jumping. And usually it's like there's a rule of doing 1 to 2 years of tracking without a wingsuit, and then you put a wingsuit on. And you basically take it step by step so that you, by the time you're on a wingsuit jumping off the mountain, you know what you're doing.
Okay. So
you're minimizing the risk.
So from what I gather from what you've just said, that would be a typical route that somebody would do. Is that the route you took, or did you, because of the type of personality you've got, was there any shortcuts? Did you bypass any of the natural progression? Or are you talking from experiences, as in that was what your progression was?
Yes. As I said, when you get to base jumping, I mean, now there's a lot more courses, even more so. But back when I started, it was all about mentorship. And even still now, to reach a certain level and do certain thing, you basically need to find a mentor, someone that's like willing to literally take you under their wings and show you the ropes of, like, you know, the mountains and base jumping and exit and calculating things and, you know, to look out for the dangers and what to avoid and what to do. Yes, I did it like that. I had a mentor, Yoki Summer, and he, knowing my background, because base jumping is a sport that right away you can put yourself in a very, very, very dangerous, you know, lethal situation. So you basically want to take a couple step backs and be, you know, extra safe. So I did that. It took me 3 years before putting a wingsuit on. I did 2 years of skydiving and then 2 years of base jumping before I put the wingsuit on. So it was a progression of being really good at tracking, angle flying, understanding all of that. And with the background that I had of gymnastics and acrobatics and cliff diving, which is the best background you can have for the sport, it's still, you know, taking it a step at a time. So it's been almost 12 years now of skydiving and base jumping, and wingsuit flying has been about 11 years. And then wingsuit base jumping, this was my 9th year.
Interesting. So this is something obviously you've progressed onto. And I think for the listeners out there as well, although you're embarking on a very, very unique career, one thing you've touched upon, I think, is so relevant for anybody's career is finding a mentor and learning from somebody that's been 100%. There and learning from somebody that has already achieved what you want to achieve in life, the path that you want to explore. So it's funny that there's still that connection. You know, there is somebody that could be working in finance. There's somebody that could be working as an entrepreneur, building a business, a physical business. And yet you're jumping out of aeroplanes, helicopters, big wave surfing. But you've mentioned numerous times about mentorship. So there's still that correlation, regardless of what you do for a career. It's having that mentorship and learning from people that have actually achieved what you want to achieve in life. It's interesting that you've mentioned that, actually, because I get a lot of people asking how they find mentors. And how can you, you know, how did you originally find your mentor? What was your experience?
That's a great, great question, actually. Great way of putting it up. So I basically talk about manifesting and how to find a mentor. I was looking at these YouTube videos of this Red Bull athlete called Yoki Summer. And he was posting the most interesting, most, you know, cutting edge videos of wingsuit flying. And I literally got obsessed, you know, watching this, being like, Frank, I want to do that one day, and like praying to Mother Nature, to God, to the infinite intelligence, whatever you want to call it. And like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. Well, Damien, I basically, a year after watching these videos, I end up starring on a movie with him. He was doing, he was starring in it for wingsuit flying. I was starring in it for cliff diving and kite surfing and big wave surfing. And we end up a week before the movie was released in Paris at the Grand Rex. The producer of the show was like, hey, by the way, because I was telling him, dude, the wingsuit flying part is going to be so sick. Yoki Summer, that guy. And he's like, dude, he's coming to the Rex. You're going to meet him. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? No way. And so anyway, next thing you know, we meet in France. And from reading the book Think and Grow Rich, from the book the Four Agreements, from having mentors in my life that is like, hey, Niccolo, whenever, you know, if you want to, like, you know, have somebody help you out, always think about what is in it for them. What can you offer them in order to want to take their time to help you with, this is like with anything in life. Yeah. If you want somebody to help you, you got to be willing to help them with something. And you have to think about what is it that I can offer him? Because, you know, with Yoki, for example, finding this mentor in wingsuit base jumping that you need somebody to mentor him, I was thinking to myself, what can I offer to him?
Yeah.
And so when I went to meet him, next thing you know, he loves surfing. He loves big wave surfing. And right away, I'm like, that's what you're going to offer him. You're going to offer him to come to Maui to stay at your home. I'm going to offer to train him in free diving at the gym, all the cardio, the strength, the stability, the surfing, this everything that requires to big wave surfing in exchange for him to mentor me in the whole wingsuit flying world. And that ended up being, you know, a 4-year journey of shooting 3 documentaries together. And that ended up being what changed completely my life, is knowing to offer something to someone in order for them to offer something back to you and take that initial first step. And that's what I offered to him right away after we met each other, which was already like, I can't believe I'm meeting my hero, the person that I've been looking at his videos for the last 2 years. And I end up shooting a video with him. But the thing that I offered him was like, hey, Yoki, I'd be more than happy to show you the ropes in big wave surfing. Come to Hawaii, stay at my home. I'm going to cook for you, train for you. We're going to spend, live our lives together for the time that it takes. And then let's switch it. Let's do 6 months. Well, next thing you know, was 3 years. We shoot Liftoff season 1, season 2. And then we shot Modern Explorer, 5 different season in Modern Explorers, and, you know, created one of the best friendships and bond that we've been, you know, knowing each other now for 10 years. And he's one of my best friends. And, you know, he started as being my mentor.
I think you've given some absolutely essential information to the listeners there, because I urge all of the listeners out there is to find a mentor. And the mentor can mean many different things. You can find online mentors that you never actually have contact with, but you use their content that they provide to increase your ability to do what it is you want to achieve. There's a way of reaching out, but I've run online brands, I've run kind of coaching programs in the business space and things like that. And the amount of people that approach it so wrong, you've just touched upon, give before you receive. Give before you ask. The amount of people that will DM me on social media or drop an email, and I've never spoken to them before. They've never shared any content. They've never, I know absolutely nothing of them. And then they want to jump on to pick my brain for an hour. Or can we grab a coffee? And it's like, well, hold up a minute here. You know, you're ultimately wanting my time. And I don't even know who you are. A bit different if it's someone you've spoken to on a regular basis. But so many people don't understand the fundamentals of human dynamics, social dynamics. And it's about, let me see what I can provide you. How can I help you? And sometimes it's not even with the ulterior motive of wanting something back in return. Naturally, that can happen. So I think it's a real insight that you went in with that mindset. I want to give before anything comes back. I like that. I like that a lot. I want to touch upon a couple of other things. Have you had any near-death experiences through what you do?
So I've had something that I was like, whoa, that could have been, you know, a chope or a jaws. There was, you know, some moments where you look at the clip afterwards and you're like, whoa, that was pretty crazy. But, honestly, not like in the moment of me doing something, I never thought like, oh my gosh, like this, you know, like I almost died there. It was never like that. You know, knock on wood. And in Italy, they say, grab your balls for good luck. But I've never had that. I've you either knock on wood in the US.
If I was surfing a big wave or through the air, my balls would be the size of marbles. They'd be that small. look, I'm going to jump in here because I know through doing research and kind of following you for a while now, you won an award for Wipeout of the Year.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, I'm not sure that's an award that anyone actually wants to win. I don't think you set out to wanting to win that award. But here's the difference between a normal mindset and your mindset is I see the Wipeout, and I've asked you the question, have you had any near-death experiences? Well, I'm sorry, but anybody, 99% of people would have said, yeah, when I fucking dipped on that wave. But you didn't. You didn't. So again, are we going back that you prepared for the worst? And when it actually happened, you had almost somehow prepared yourself for it and you knew what to do to a degree in that instance, whether or not it's to catch in a breath, position your body, don't fight it. Does that make sense what I've just said?
And would you 100%. And so I'll actually take it a few steps backwards. It was one of my goals was to win Wipeout of the Year and Biggest Wave of the Year the same year. Because that for me was a story that I could tell for the rest of my life that, hey, you can go down hard in life, but as long as you pick yourself back up and continue following your dreams, you can make it big too. And some people say I actually won the big wave that year as well. They gave it to Yuri Solade, which is an amazing, beautiful human from Brazil that lives here in Maui as well. My wave was actually the biggest wave, was the tallest wave.
How big?
Yuri, what's that?
How big?
Over 70 feet. But in any case, it was on the same, you know, it was the year that winter. That summer, it was a Chopo in Tahiti that I had that Wipeout. And to cover there, in the moment, I didn't think I was going to die because you don't have time to think. It was just like, as soon as that rail dug and I went underwater, I went like, oh, here we go. I didn't think like, oh my gosh, this is one of the gnarliest waves in the world that I'm going head down in the thickest lip specific. There was none of that. For me, it was just like, hey, Niccolo, this is what you've trained for your whole life. Right now, the best thing you can do is just go limp and completely be jello so that you can bounce and let your arms and legs and hips and body move. I got pinball on the reef and, you know, cut my knees and my back. But I didn't think about dying, you know. And then, yeah, I got held under a long wave. I got seven waves. I got drug. When I came back out, I was spitting blood from my lungs compressing and probably cracking some of the capillaries on the. So I spat blood for five times. I had a really intense headache for 5 minutes. And then about 15 minutes after, I went back out to catch another one. And it was something that, you know, looking back in the moment, there's all the adrenaline rush, you know, that's taking over. But, you know, looking back, I had, you know, the day after and for about a month, I had a really bad neck whiplash from the impact, you know. But, you know, and same thing, wingsuit flying. I'm doing some stuff which is extremely dangerous. You know, it's like a very little mistake and you're dead. You know what I mean? Or it's a really bad injury. But I can't be thinking about that. You know what I mean? When I'm in the moment, I'm not. When I'm preparing or I'm visualizing or I'm thinking about what I'm going to do, I can think about, whoa, that can be, you know, I don't want that. But when I'm actually decided and committed to doing what I'm doing, it's because I've had so much preparation and understanding and awareness before that when I'm doing it, I'm not thinking. I'm very confident of what I'm about to do.
Yeah, I forget who said it, and I don't think anyone's actually can actually coin the phrase, but winners don't think of losing. So I suppose there's a similarity. Is that you're focusing on
I'm focusing on executing And I'm focusing that if like in, so it's kind of different in kite surfing and big wave surfing. Part of the game is to fall, that like you're going to fall. You know what I mean? Like you're going to, you know, you're going to eat it. In wingsuit flying, you do the fall, you do the mistakes, skydiving, or you're doing the mistake, you're trying something if you're flying away from it. Like there's certain things that you know you can make a little mistake. And then there's sometimes certain things that is like, there's no room for error here. Like, but I've worked so hard that I know that I'm going to be doing this and there's no room for error. So you're not, you cannot be thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. If I make this mistake, I'm going to, no, you can't be thinking about that. You know, you got to be thinking 100% that you're executing what you're about to do. It's not, there's not that thought process in your head at all when you're doing it. If I'm standing on the edge of a cliff and I'm about to do or flying through the hole, I can't be thinking, oh my gosh, if I make a mistake. No, I mean, I'm just so focused on what I'm doing and I'm just executing. I know I'm going to do that. You know, I know I'm going to do that. In walking in a cage, I've done MMA as well myself. I haven't fought so much, but it's you're stepping in the cage. I'm pretty sure knowing that, hey, I'm going to get kicked. I'm going to get punched. You know what I mean? It's part of the game. I'm going to take some hits, but I'm going to be okay. You know what I mean? And can it happen that you get knocked out? Can it happen you get tapped out? Yes, it's part of the game. But I'm sure when you're going in there, you're not really thinking about it. And if, you know, if it happens, it happens. It's part of that sport. It's part of that game. In our sport, there's a certain thing that you think in wingsuit flying, you think certain things can happen here and certain things you have to be ready that here it just doesn't happen. You've worked so hard. It's something a bit more simple to some degree where this is just, you're executing here. You've already done so much of the work where you could potentially make a mistake here. And when you're executing it here, there's no thought process of potentially making that mistake. It's just not even in your thought, you know?
So in terms of what I'm going to try to kind of nail down on and differentiate, when you're wingsuit flying, would you say that you, apart from kind of air pockets and obviously mountains and things like that, would you say that the outcome is entirely down to your actions more so than big wave surfing, because you're almost open to the elements with a big wave, whether or not that big wave, you're not prepared for something like I'm assuming a huge wave can throw obstacles in your way that you can't really train for. Am I right in thinking that?
Yes. Let me frame it this way. There is, you know, in all, I think all these extreme sport, a certain level of faith, a certain level of like, hey, if you don't want to use the term faith, a certain level of absolute confidence in knowing the things will turn out the way you want it to turn out, or that if it won't turn out the way you want it to turn out, it'll be a great learning experience or you'll get to learn something from it. In big wave surfing, in kiting, yes, there's a lot more. Wave could be coming here, wave could be coming there. You know, a chop, a fall is a lot more like, hey, it can happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's part of the game. In wingsuit flying, same thing. You are still with the elements, air pocket, weather and stuff like that. It still comes down to you knowing, hey, there's some bad weather coming in. Hey, that the wind is coming from this way. Hey, it's in the morning. It's about this time. The wind is still not coming up the right way. We have to wait until there's the switch. There's still all this knowledge that you need to prepare and understand beforehand what you're about to do. So although we can say you're in a more stable environment, you're still dealing with Mother Nature. At any point, a gust could come through. There could be a bird could fly over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There is that, but at some point you kind of, you know, hey, Mother Nature, I have trust in you that when I'm flying through that hole, you're not going to make a bird come out right there. And then the bird is going to hear me from a distance. He's going to hear this. I already checked beforehand that the conditions are good. I radioed down there that the conditions are good. So I'm doing as much preparation to execute what I'm about to execute. At some point, there's only so much that you can do. You're still, you know, you're still going to push off that cliff. You're still going to fly. Things, you know, have to fall in place as well. Same thing in big wave surfing, same thing in kiting, same thing walking at the octagon, same thing when you start a family, same thing when you start a business. At some point, you're kind of going for it and having that trust or that faith that things will work out. I mean, doing the podcast with me today, you're like, hey, I hope things work out. You know, my intention is good. I prepared for this podcast. I'm going to do the best I can. At some point, you have to let it go and go for it, you know?
Yeah, there is still that level and everything. With a guest, you know, sometimes you can do all the preparation and you know that you've done everything you can physically do to prepare. But sometimes, and there's been a couple of times on my podcast where I've just not clicked with the person that I'm interviewing. And it's almost like you've not had that energy. Whereas like today's just been free flowing. But I knew today's podcast was going to go fine anyway, because we actually had a catch up on the phone for a good half an hour, I think maybe 3-4 weeks ago. And I got a great energy from you. And it's funny. So I've spoken with a couple of friends and kind of business associates. And I said, look, I've got this guy coming on the podcast. I said, and I'm kind of not that I'm not excited for guests, but there are some guests that come on that you only know them through what they've achieved, what they how they educate, and things like that. And when I spoke with you, is I knew we clicked. There's that kind of energy. So today I was very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, buddy, same here.
And it's funny because I've never actually had a pre-call with somebody. So when you said it, I thought, okay, happy to do it. Jumped on the call. And then afterwards, when we started speaking about what you
cut
do,
out there for a second.
Just saying that when we spoke, we started discussing overlanding and how you were based in Hawaii. Then you went through to Europe and we had that connection with kind of the camper vans and just that free spiritual self. Yeah, I don't jump out of aeroplanes off mountains or anything like that. But for me, you know, I would quite easily jump in the ring for a fight, no problem at all, or do some other sports out there. But I think there was that connection. And like you say, you can only do so much preparation. And then ultimately, what happens, happens. I'm conscious now that we need to wrap things up, but I've still got a few more questions for you. And one of the ones that I want to touch upon is, what scares you?
You cut out there. You wanted to ask me a few more questions and then it went blank.
Yeah, a couple more questions. What scares you?
What scares me? Not pursuing something that I love. That scares me. If you don't have a passion, I mean, I'm thinking if I didn't have a passion and that would scare me, but luckily I do, and yeah, I mean, I don't think too much about things that scare me. I mean, yes, obviously, sometimes you see certain things that are happening in the world, and you see certain friends, or you know, I've been scared before thinking about, am I doing something not right? Okay, let me take a few steps backwards and reassess the situation, and then I'm not scared anymore. So, yeah, I don't have too much that scares me aside from when you asked me this right now, I thought, whew,
no.
I wouldn't be doing something that I'm happy or stoked in my life, something that I'm passionate about. That would be a scary life to live when you're just kind of like dead inside.
When you're existing. Rather than
when you're existing, but exactly,
and it's also the same sort of mindset of life happening to you or life happening for you, there's a huge gap and a difference between the two. How spiritual are you?
I'm a very spiritual human being, I want to say, for sure.
And does that roll over into religious?
You know, I think I grew up being Catholic, but the more I grown up, it's like every religion has the same thing. You know what I mean? Whether you're Buddhist or Hinduism or Christian, or it's like, it's all, for me, that's why I say you want to call it God, you want to call it Mother Nature, you want to call it infinite intelligence, you want to call it the universe, whatever you want to call it. I feel like there's something out there that you can kind of connect with a little bit more and ask for some guidance, and it will talk back to you. And we can also call it intuition at some point, but I want to say I'm very spiritual. I definitely pray. I meditate. I talk, you know, I have deep conversation with good friends of mine. I believe in a higher power. I believe in something bigger than myself. Yes.
Have you done any plant medicines?
I have. I have done ayahuasca twice. I've done DMT twice. I've done 5-MeO-DMT once. And then I've done mushrooms, psilocybin, maybe 7-8 times in my life. And I can only speak greatly of it. The reason why I can, my experience, why I speak greatly of it is, I think it's set in settings. The way that I've approached plant medicine was always with a certain intention. Yeah. So it was always for me to take the plant medicine, for me to grow, to learn something from it, to get some download of information, for me to be a better version of myself. And every time that I've done it, I've had an amazing experience, a great experience, which meaning that I wrote down my intention, like, hey, you know, God, Mother Nature, this is what I'm working on right now. I have these doubts, you know, these fears. I'm not sure. Could it be this? Could it be that? Can you give me kind of an insight, an answer, something that I can go with? And then I did the mushrooms, or I did the ayahuasca, or I had the 5-MeO-DMT, and I had an answer, and I had a download, and I had a vision, and I had an intuition that it helped me grow and understand something better, and ultimately make me a better person and happier and more fulfilled and more stable and more aligned and more clear. And so, yes, it's I've done plant medicine. It's been awesome.
Did you find that you built a deeper connection with the surfing, the flight suit flying? Because I think there's an overlap in terms of the earth energy and nature. Did you find that the two kind of interconnected to a degree?
Yeah, I mean, I want to put it to a broader thing. I think I connected a lot more with nature, more with the people that I love, being kinder to myself. I, you know, respected myself more. You kind of, you know, stop beating yourself up to as much as, you know, I would sometimes. And, kind of gave me a little bit more insight, more appreciation and gratitude for certain things. So yes, with the sports, with the family and friends, with food, with nature, with animals, with kind of like everything, with the world, with, you know, with everybody, it puts you more into this connection. We hear it over and over, but you really do feel like, well, what do I mean when I say we're all one? Meaning we're all in this together. Everybody that's born on this planet comes in. Everybody has some trauma, whether it's good or bad. You know what I mean? Everybody's going through some challenge, some difficulty. And same thing with the planet, and same thing with the animals, and same thing with the plants. And so to make it a long story, a grand thing short, it has made me, you know, more grateful for what I have and what I've been able to experience. And also has made me kind of like realize, whoa, everything that has happened in my life, it's been for me, not to me. It's been perfectly ba-boom, 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 fallen in place. And this has, you know, it has released a lot of, you know, the fear and the anxiety, and sometimes maybe the depression, and it has brought me more clarity and more alignment and more gratitude and more focus and more understanding and more awareness. So, but I can also say, hey, I think, you know, first of all, you don't necessarily need the plant medicine, and it depends in which way you're doing it. It can maybe be not so good. You can freak yourself out. So I think it's really, it's again, the intention and the setting of how you go into it that is going to ultimately give you the best result. And that's the same thing I feel like with any relationship, whether it's a friend, whether it's family, whether it's intimate, whether it's work. If you go into a relationship with this, like, hey, this is what I got to offer. This is what I know. This is what I can help you with. I'm all ears to learn here, to grow and to be a better version of myself and to help you and help myself and help the world be a better place. I feel like if you go in with anything in life with that intention, I'm pretty sure you're going to have a good life or you're going to have a good experience and things will work out. You might go through a tough moment, just like even in plant medicine, you might go through all like, whoa, 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 to then like, oh, wow, oh, awesome. So
give yourself that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this certain sense of like, you know, surrendering.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of like you put your intention there and then you surrender to receiving this download or to grow, to get a better understanding of what's going on. And I think for that, plant medicine is awesome. If you go into it with a good intention instead of just going there to, I'm going to trip out, man. You know what I mean? Or you're going there for a party or you're going there to thinking that you're really going to like get something that you can like show off to somebody else or something to power over. You're not going to have a good experience. So you might get, you know,
bitch slapped
a little bit. Yes, you will get that as well. So I think, again, it's all about what intention you're going into it. And if you're going into, you know, when you're going into something with good intention.
Yeah.
And usually when you go in with good intention, you're going to get good intentions back. You know what I mean? It's just, that's my experience.
I think the takeaway that I've got through what you've just said is that, very similar to myself, is that one, respecting plant medicine. Two, respecting yourself. And you've hit the nail on the head when you say that you have to surrender. I think people that have bad experiences with plant-based medicines are people that put up a fight, try to fight certain things, where you do need to go into it, again, with clear intention. And there's a huge difference going into what I would class as a plant medicine ceremony, that you're going to educate yourself, you're going to be enlightened, you're going to be open to learning, open to opening your heart and energy source, rather than I'm going to go in there and get shit-faced and see what sort of buzz I can get out of it.
Yeah. so different one to the other. You definitely want to go into it with a growth heart and minded intention, rather than just going in there to trip out. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Look, I'm conscious for sure of the time. I just want to ask you a couple more. Who inspires you?
Oof, I have many people that inspire me, personal friends and mentors, and then, you know, people out there in the world. I have specifically this, I've been very fortunate to have had this mentor, this beautiful soul that came into my life, Jim Bowens. He's 75 years old right now. And he inspires me so much because at 75, he's out there surfing and foiling and kiting every day. He has the biggest smile on his face. He's laughing all the time, has great friends, and he's a healthy human being that gets to spend, you know, good time with his friends, like doing what he loves, and do it consistently. I get inspiration from a bunch of people all over the world. I mean, you know, I love to learn listening to podcasts, and there's a bunch of people out there that give out amazing information, like you, like Joe Rogan, like Aubrey Marcus, a bunch of people out there that right now I'm not getting the name out of it. But Bob Proctor and people that give out information to share things where you can improve your life and improve yourself, being a better version of yourself. And my wife inspires me. My friends inspire me. I have a lot of people that I look up to that bring a lot of joy and inspiration in my life for sure.
Love it. And just explain to the listeners, what does your year look like? Because we touched upon the whole kind of camper van and overlanding. Just explain to the listeners what a year entails for you, and maybe tell us what your plans are for 2023.
So right now I'm waiting to, I'm going to be going for a stunt, most likely in January in the British Virgin Islands. And then I'm back here in Hawaii until April. This is where I'm based at. I paraglide and kite surf and surf. And I'm a personal trainer as well. I do retreats here in Maui. So I'm usually based in the winter here in Hawaii. And then from May to October, I'm in the van on the road with my wife all over Europe. We're basically all over the mountains in France, in Italy, in Slovenia, in Norway, in Spain. And we basically stay around Europe. And then in Sardinia, in the island where I grew up, I do tours and retreats over there. And so basically we're 6 months out of the year that we're spending time in Europe in our van and seeing friends and stuff like that. And then I spend the winters in Hawaii in our home here in Maui. It's a small island, but we have everything and then some we have such a diversity of different things to do over here. So I spend the winter here. It's a beautiful place. And so I do about 6 months here and 6 months in Europe.
Absolutely love it, man. And the last question is, what is your definition of success?
My definition of success is if you're, let's call it stoked, if you're joyful, if you're grateful most of the time, 80%. That's the definition of success for me. If most of the time you're really enjoying what you're doing in your life, I think you're succeeding. And that's my definition of success. I guess if you're stoking out, if you're happy most of the time, there's going to be some tough challenges. There's going to be some tough times. There's some ups and downs. But are you mostly a happy human being? Are you mostly fulfilled or are you not? The definition of success is if you're mostly in a very happy state of mind.
Absolutely love it. And for any other listeners out there that want to follow you, get in contact with you about retreats and things like that, where can they find you?
Yeah, my Instagram @Niccolo_Porcella. That's probably the thing where I'm staying the most active on posting stuff. And then they can reach me on my website as well, NicoloPorcella.com. But mainly my Instagram. I have my Facebook as well, but what I'm not the most active on social media all the time, but the Instagram is the one where I stay the most connected, posting some stuff. And then hopefully we'll have some documentaries coming out soon here on the big channels.
Brother, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've had an amazing time. Feel great energy from you. So guys, go out there, check this man out. Absolute adrenaline junkie. Very successful. Some huge takeaways from this podcast. So thank you for tuning in this week. And again, brother, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, Damien, same here, buddy. Had a great time. This was awesome.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. If you like what we're doing over at Mail Mastery, I'd massively appreciate you leaving me a review and sharing amongst your friends. The conversations and guests I have on the show really does have the potential to change people's lives, and a review helps me reach a much wider audience. You can also connect with me on Instagram at Mail Mastery Official, where we post exclusive content on a daily basis. And finally, if you want access to some of the more controversial content I put out, the type that would most likely get me cancelled by the woke warriors and snowflakes and see me thrown off the social media platforms, then head on over to mailmastery.co.uk and check out the blog section.